My fourth point is on housing. Europe is facing a housing crisis, a crisis of affordability, access and quality. Our citizens are calling for solutions and we are responding. Under your presidency, we aim to launch a European Housing Alliance and we will convene a high-level European Housing Summit. This is one of the defining social challenges of our time and our people expect us to deliver.
This is my video update on this Friday afternoon, July the 3rd, coming to you from Limassol, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news and let's start things off with an update on what is happening on the front lines in Ukraine. We are getting reports from the mapping channels, from Russian sources, from Ukraine sources, even from the Collective West mainstream media, though they are not reporting things as they are unfolding, as they are really unfolding in Konstantinovka. They seem to be about 3 months delayed, but we are getting reports that Konstantinovka is now undergoing a final clearing of Ukrainian soldiers, and the Russian military will have captured in full Konstantinovka very soon. Of course, the Russian Ministry of Defense always takes a couple of weeks before they come out with an official announcement that a city or a settlement has been captured by the Russian military, but expect in a couple of days to maybe a week's time, the military analysts on both sides announcing that Russia has captured Konstantinovka. The Collective West media, for example, Reuters, they ran an article saying that the Russian military is now on the outskirts of Konstantinovka. That's what they ran with yesterday. So that's Reuters. They're a couple of months behind the events as they are unfolding on the front line. That's not by accident. They want to make it as if these cities can be captured within a week or two's time, and Russia is delayed in capturing cities. So they'll announce that Russia's on the outskirts of Konstantinovka yesterday, and then say in a week or two, they'll run with articles saying that Konstantinovka has been captured by Russia, and people will believe that, you know, these cities, all it takes is a week or two to capture them. Why is Russia moving so slow? Reuters will never admit that these are very, very heavily fortified cities on the defensive belt of Donbass, which take months to dismantle and destroy. And Russia has now done that. They have dismantled and destroyed another very, very well fortified city, a large city in Donbass. Liman is next, and then there were two, Slavyansk and Kramatorsk, and Russia is under 10 kilometers away from Kramatorsk, and I believe Slavyansk as well. They're moving very close to these two remaining cities of Donbass. So anyway, that is the big news for this Friday. Did you see the news about the Russian corvette and the German ship in the Baltic? They faced off in the Baltic Sea as the German ship apparently was going to seize a Russian shadow fleet oil tanker named the Kira K, I want to say, the Kira something, and the Russian ship was escorting this tanker, and they told the German ship to back off. They said, back off now, and the German ship backed off. So a bit of a standoff, a face-off in the Baltic Sea, the location of Gilligan's sabotage of Nord Stream So that happened on June 30th, actually, and it is being reported on now. So Le Goblin Vert, he showed up in Kiev yesterday after the massive Russian strike into Ukraine and the big strike into Kiev. And Zelensky, he spoke with the media. He was in Ireland as the strike was taking place. And then after the strike, he flew to Kiev. And who knows where he's going to go next. But he talked to the media at one of the locations of a Russian missile strike. And he said that Putin is losing. He said that Putin is afraid to meet with him. And he asked for more weapons and money and stuff like that. But his main message was that Ukraine will win and Putin is afraid to meet with Zelensky. That was his message as he was speaking to the media. Everything was planned, of course. The media, all of it was planned. Everything was scripted. It felt like it was scripted, to be quite honest. And everything was very controlled as Zelensky was making these statements. Stunning and Brave put out a post on X calling for more sanctions against Russia after the strike into Kiev. Stunning and Brave said that what has to happen now is not diplomacy, not negotiations, not an understanding that this conflict is lost, that Russia is winning this, that Russia can strike Ukraine when they wish, and there's really not much Ukraine can do about it, though Ukraine military is now asking countries around the world for whatever Patriot interceptors they have to give it up. That's how desperate the situation has become. But the Stunning and Brave, her response to what happened yesterday in Ukraine from this Russian strike was for more sanctions. I thought they just wrapped up sanctions package 2021, are they on 22, or are they on 20? I've lost count, to be quite honest. I think they wrapped up sanctions package 21. Her response was more sanctions. That's how the EU is going to proceed with this conflict. Another sanctions package. What did Stunning and Brave say? She condemned the Russian strike. She talked about $90 billion support loan to strengthen Kiev's defenses. It's a loan, according to her. And she said, I will propose to sanction more entities supporting Russia's military-industrial complex in response to the strikes. The more Moscow attacks civilians, the more sanctions must be imposed. The more strikes, the more sanctions, she said. We are going to raise the cost until Russia understands it cannot win. The exact reverse is happening. Russia has won, and you are not raising any costs. You're making Ukraine worse off. You're making Europe and the European Union economies worse off. And all you're doing is strengthening Russia, the Russian military, and the Russian economy. But Stunning and Brave, she does not seem to understand this. I imagine her office in Brussels. This is all they do. I don't think they have anything else that they do other than put together sanctions packages, a team of 5,000 employees that's just put together sanctions packages. That's it. Just last week, Kaya Kallas was telling us that Russia was losing. Remember that presser that she held in Brussels? And she said that Russia is not winning. That was what she said. I believe that was her exact quote. Russia is not winning. Anyway, Russia continues to also hit at the fuel stations in Ukraine. I believe they knocked out another three or four fuel stations yesterday. Some analysts claim that Russia has destroyed, the Russian military has hit 150 gas stations so far. I've read some other reports which claim 200 plus. Actually, the 150, it was confirmed by Ukrainian officials. So that 150 number, I do believe it has been confirmed by Ukraine. I've read other analysis which claims that Russia has hit more than 200 petrol stations. But these stations are not spread out throughout Ukraine that Russia is going after. They're going after specific gas stations on the M, I believe the M29 highway, I want to say, Kharkov and Dnipropetrovsk. Those are the petrol stations that they are targeting. So Trump is bashing NATO again. All of this is happening right ahead of the NATO meeting. You know, the EU cool kids and the United States, all of NATO, Canada, the UK, they all wanted to head into the NATO meeting in Ankara with the narrative that the tide is turning and Ukraine is winning. They wanted that intact. They were hoping that they were going to head into Ankara with the tide is turning, Russia is losing talking points, and that would open up 150 billion euros to Ukraine from NATO member states and all kinds of other bilateral deals and funding and military contracts and stuff like that. And it doesn't look like they're going to head into Ankara with that narrative holding, not after the big missile strikes that really have shocked the collective West, especially the EU leaders, the European leaders. Kallas was shocked. Boris Johnson posted about it on X as well. He was shocked with what he saw in Ukraine. Zelensky is demanding more money and more weapons. So the NATO meeting in Ankara is going to be very interesting, because now you have Trump bashing NATO again. He is complaining about how the United States is spending the most on NATO. Ridiculous for the USA to continue along this one-sided path with the relationship when the relationship is not reciprocal. They were not there for us. President DJT, when he says they were not there for us, he is talking about Iran. That is what he is talking about. Still upset about how NATO was not there for the United States when the whole Iran thing went down. Well, Iran is, the United States is NATO, and the United States was engaged with Iran. So I guess you could technically say that there was a NATO presence in the conflict with Iran, but Trump wanted more. He wanted more NATO support. Not that NATO would have been able to actually provide anything or do anything for the United States. What is NATO at the end of the day? Without the United States, it's nothing. It is absolutely nothing without the United States. And Trump even posted a chart on Truth Social showing what NATO is all about. The United States in a big red bar, a big red column is the United States. And there you have the UK, France, Italy, Poland. Pistorius, he is taking issue with Trump continually bashing Europe's support investment into NATO. The defense minister of Germany, he is actually saying that NATO member states, specifically Germany, is not a vassal of the Trump administration. It is not about loyalty, because Trump is saying that NATO is not loyal to the United States. And Pistorius said in an interview with Der Spiegel, NATO members are not required to be loyal to the United States. I think Pistorius is not understanding how this NATO thing works. Pistorius did not get the memo of how NATO works. Just listen to Rutte, Pistorius. Rutte will show you how it's done, how you kiss up to Daddy Trump. But Pistorius said to Der Spiegel, NATO's concept is not one of blind obedience, but rather a spirit free in deliberation. Pistorius said that decisions within NATO are made by free consensus of all member states and without being dictated by individual member states. That should be my clown world. NATO's a free spirit, says Pistorius. Yeah, okay. Okay, let's see what happens if Trump actually got the cojones to pull the United States out of NATO or make some moves that the NATO member states, the other members, see as the United States pulling out of NATO. They're going to freak out if the U.S. all of a sudden says, you know what, we're taking our military out of this country and that country, and we're reducing our spending by 90%. You would see a collective mass freak out especially from the Europeans, but from all of the NATO members, including Pistorius. Pistorius would be flying to the White House asking Daddy Trump, what do we need to do, Daddy Trump? Please tell me, what must we do to keep you invested in NATO? So Lithuania, since we're on the topic of NATO, Lithuania is going to follow Finland and move to host nuclear weapons. They're going to remove a part of their constitution or their legislation, whatever Lithuania has, and they're going to amend a certain part in an article where it will then allow Lithuania to host nukes on their territory. Yeah, just like Finland did. Just like Finland, Lithuania to lift ban on nukes, according to the president, who said that there was practically unanimous support among party leaders for ending the country's ban on nuclear weapons. Lithuania, the Baltic states. Who's next? Latvia? Estonia? Baltic states talking about allowing nuclear weapons on their territory. You want to talk about the dumbest of dumb decisions. There you go. Finland, we're going to host nukes on our territory. Lithuania says, hold my beer. Hold my beer, Finland. Oh my God, what a disaster. What a disaster these countries have become. What are they doing? What are you guys doing? Medvedev, he posted about Finland's decision to lift the ban on nuclear weapons. And Medvedev said on X, Finland has lifted its ban on hosting nuclear weapons. What does that change for the Finns? Just one minor thing. Their country is now on Russia's nuclear target list. Rejoice, Finland. You've reached peak security. Incredible. Incredible. The decisions that the leaders of these countries are making. You're not making your country more secure. You are putting your country in serious danger. Anyway, that's Lithuania. I imagine we're going to see more countries in Europe, in the Baltics. Perhaps, who knows, perhaps Sweden. They may follow on Finland's move, and they're going to start to talk about hosting nuclear weapons. And it's not going to be American nukes. The U.S. is not going to put their nukes on these countries' territories. They'll get France to do it, right? And France is going to do it. Macron is going to do such a thing. Absolutely. Macron is all about provoking and poking Russia. Since we're on the topic of France, what a great segue. Let's talk about an update about the assassination attempt against the Ukrainian oligarch who actually has a Cypriot passport and was living in Monaco, Yermolayev. Yeah, Yermolayev. A horrific assassination because his 13-year-old son is in critical condition. His partner, I don't believe his wife, his partner had her legs amputated. Horrific. But I've talked about the fight that's happening in Ukraine between the oligarchs, the Zelensky regime, these call centers that allegedly they're fighting over because they bring huge sums of money. Anyway, Le Figaro has been doing some good reporting, actually. The French media, the publication Le Figaro, is on this. They've been on this from the beginning. And they're reporting that investigators in Monaco are now saying that it was a woman who placed this explosive backpack in this assassination attempt against the oligarch and his family. That is what Le Figaro is reporting. They've looked at their surveillance footage, investigators, and they say the suspect was wearing a black hat, a black sweatshirt, light trousers, black sneakers. The investigation, which is still primarily investigating the connection between the explosion and Ukraine, believes it was a woman in her early 30s. Several newspaper sources claim that the woman conducted reconnaissance on the oligarch as well, many, many days and many weeks and months in advance. That does, you know, that does fit a pattern of the SBU in assassination strikes in Russia. Correct me if I'm wrong, everybody. There were many times, if not most of the times, there were women that were recruited in these assassinations, successful assassinations of bloggers, of generals. Many times it has been a woman, so it does fit a Ukraine SBU Zelensky pattern. So Trump, he gave an interview. Very windy. Let's walk out of here. Let's get out of here. Let's make our way to the main road. So Trump gave an interview to CNBC yesterday, and this was very much a damage control interview. That is exactly what was happening. Because a lot of damage from Trump's financial reports and his 2 billion crypto profits, or his 1.2 billion crypto profits and his 3,700 stock trades and all of that stuff that was revealed in the 900-page financial disclosure. And a lot of angry people, a lot of people asking serious questions about what U.S. President Trump is up to, how he's using the office of the president, what his family is up to, why are they profiting so much and the rest of us are not profiting. And so why is the crypto market going to crap and Trump is making billion plus dollar profits? How did he make $600 million on a freaking meme coin? All these questions are being asked. And so the White House, they decided to call CNBC and run some damage control. And Trump was trying to explain what is going on with his finances. He talked about his family, his sons, and how they do many investments, and he has no idea what they're doing, but they handle the investments on the family's behalf, on his behalf. And he talked about Intel and about crypto, about AI. Actually, when he was asked about crypto and the money that he's made from crypto, he did a very slick pivot, right? He was asked about the money that he's made on crypto, and instead of answering the question directly, Trump pivoted and said, "My number one goal was to make the United States the world leader in crypto, to beat out China." So he didn't directly answer the question about the meme coins and all the profits he's made from his crypto investments. He pivoted to China. And then he said that the U.S. is going through a golden age. A golden age is what Trump said. Everyone is making money. We are making money, he said. But when Trump says we are making money and we are going through a golden age, he means we, as in, you know, his group, right? The club that we're not a part of. It's a golden age. Yes, they are experiencing a golden age. The rest of the world, not so much. But Trump, you know, he did catch himself. You got to give him credit. The European globalists, they would have said, we are going through a golden age, meaning we as globalists, as the cool kids, we are absolutely going through a golden age, and they would leave it at that. But Trump actually caught himself, and he said, we are going through a golden age. And then he said, not just rich people, but I believe the words he used were normal people, or people with normal jobs, also have more money. So that's the awareness of Trump, right? He has that over the European globalists, where they don't even think about the people. They would never have mentioned normal people are also making money. But Trump caught himself as he was talking about, we are going through a golden age. We're making a ton of money. We're doing great in our investments and our stock trades. And then he said, oh, crap. People are also, with normal jobs, are also doing well. Anyway, that was an interesting interview from CNBC, but no doubt about it. It was all about damage control. So let's do some clown worlds. I'll keep today's video a bit shorter than usual because it has been a long day, many shows, a live program, and I'm just running out of time. I'm just running out of time. That's simple. Clown world. Hunter Biden. He posted on X. Yes, that Hunter Biden, the Renaissance man, venture capitalist, investor, chemistry expert, author, artist. He posted on X, I'm officially nominating Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize. No president in history has ended. One sec. We're going to have to start over. We are going to start over. This is a great place, by the way. Great place for coffee, for food. Let's go this way. He said, no president in history has ended the same war so many times. Our dear leader has ended the war with Iran at least 38 times by CNN's count. No president has ever done this before, and he is nowhere near finished ending it. It's a record worthy of a Nobel Committee recognition. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Hunter Biden, I've got sweat in my eye and it's stinging. Hunter Biden being cute, being cute. Burisma, anybody? Hunter, Burisma? Board of Burisma, Hunter? You want to talk about that? No, you don't want to talk about that? Okay, don't talk about that. How about selling paintings allegedly at $500,000 a pop? You want to talk about that? No, I don't want to talk about that. Okay. Anyway, that's Hunter Biden. What else? The leader of Syria, al-Shara, al-Jalani, he was tasked with putting together a transitional parliament. I believe like 70 people, also a great place for coffee and bread and food. Nomad, very popular here in Limassol. Al-Shara, al-Jalani, he needs to put together a transitional parliament. And one of his picks for the parliament is an actress, a Netflix actress. And she is very humbled by al-Shara choosing her to be part of the transitional parliament. These people are not voted on or anything like that. They're just part of this transitional parliament as al-Shara tries to create a stable government in Syria. Al-Qaeda, al-Jalani, al-Shara. So yeah, he's very progressive. According to the New York Post, Syrian president appoints Netflix star Rosina Lazgani to new parliament. Humble experience is what she said. A humble experience. She's a Netflix actress. Very popular Netflix actress, by the way. She's very humbled. by Al Jilani choosing her to be part of the parliament. No political experience or anything. It's all about, according to the New York Post, about Al Jilani showing that that he can create a diverse, no joke, he can create a diverse government, a diverse parliament. Oh my God. Oh boy, I did not see that one coming. I did not see Al Jilani talking about diversity is our strength. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. You see, he's a progressive head shopper. Puts on a suit, cleans up his beard, buys or is gifted Trump cologne and perfume, and now he's diversifying his government. Al Jilani, Al Shirah, everybody. I think we have a whole lot of clown worlds today. One sec. How about the story of Machado? Remember her? The Nobel Prize winner, since Hunter Biden was talking about the Nobel Prize going to Trump. Well, Machado already gave Trump the Nobel Prize, right? And you're not allowed to do that, by the way, according to the Nobel Prize Committee. But Machado was hoping that she would become the presidente of Venezuela. And then Trump decided not to go with Machado. And Machado has not gotten over that decision from the Trump White House. And she tried to get on a plane because you have the earthquake, a horrific earthquake in Venezuela. And many, many people died in this earthquake. And many people are still under the rubble. Actually, I saw a video of a man who was saved. He was under rubble for 8 days. And he got out of there alive. Amazing. Amazing. Our prayers for the people of Venezuela. Horrific. Was I saying? Yeah, Machado, she wanted to get into Venezuela and to try to position, to use the tragedy and to try to position herself at some sort of a run as president, to try and position herself to take over or to be in a position so that she could be considered a leader in Venezuela, so that she could eventually take power in Venezuela. And she was actually on a private jet heading towards Venezuela, and the White House, the U.S. government said, turn that freaking private jet around. Yeah. Turn it around. And so she had to turn back. The White House did not like it. They did not like it at all. Right? Yeah. She tried to get into Venezuela. Trump administration said, no, no, no. Nope. Amazing story with Machado. Let's do two more clown worlds. Mertz, we started off with one of our top stories was Germany facing off against the Russian corvette and Germany backing off. And we have Mertz's latest approval numbers. And I'm telling you, Mertz is probably the most popular German chancellor in all of history. Maybe he's the most popular European leader in all of history. His approval is at a huge 13%. 13%. Wow. Is that right? I believe that is right. I don't have it. Do I have it bookmarked? Yes, I do. I have the receipts. Mertz. Let's see here. He has become the least popular German chancellor in the last 30 years. Mertz's ratings dropped by 3% in June, and he is now at a record low 13% approval rating. Wow. Come on, Germany. Come on, Mertz. Isn't it time to call elections? Really? 13%? You're governing Germany with a 13% approval? Am I the only one that thinks that is ridiculous? And you know they're padding it up as much as they can, right? His approval rating is probably at like 5%. But they're trying to, they're probably padding it another 5% or 7 or 8%. Let's try to add another 8% onto Mertz's 5%. Come on, guys. Let's try to get it to 13. We got to try to get it to 13. Wow. That is pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. And then Mertz, he gave a speech, and he talked about how Germans are not going to be allowed to take sick days, or if they want to call in sick, they have to do so in, what did he say, in person, or they're not allowed to call in sick? That's why you have a 13% approval rating, Mertz. We can no longer accept the extraordinarily high levels of sick leave in our companies. We are abolishing sick leave by telephone and introducing the requirement to submit a medical certificate from the very first day of illness. He said, we know this is a tough decision. We can no longer afford the competitive disadvantage caused by prolonged absences from work. The disadvantage, BlackRock Mertz, that Germany is undergoing is not because of sick leaves. It is because of the cutting off of cheap Russian energy. That is why Germany is at a disadvantage. Is no one in the German media, is the German media not saying this? Are they not debunking Merz's claims that the problem is now sick leave? That's the problem? No, that's not the problem. The problem is that you got rid of the cheap, reliable, dependable, pipelined Russian gas. That's why you're not competitive anymore, Mr. Mertz. And finally, we will end today's video with a World Cup message from 008 Keir Starmer, who announced that he will allow pubs to stay open until 1 a.m. on Monday. Monday is when I believe England is playing Mexico. And so the one decision that Starmer makes, which is a correct decision. He is being very, very gracious, 008 Keir Starmer. As he is on his way out, he will allow pubs to stay open until the late hours so that everyone can watch the big World Cup match. Took him 2+ years to finally make a good decision, but he did it. He finally did it. Anyway, that's the video, everybody. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on X. We are on Rumble. We are on Telegram. Go to the Duran shop. Pick up some merch. I will see everybody tomorrow. Hit that like. Obliterate that hype. Subscribe to this channel. Take care.